With just days until the election, more than 150,000 Montanans have already voted. That's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. I'm Christopher Allen. We'll also hear about efforts to better address homelessness in Billings and from a top bear biologist who says Yellowstone grizzlies are doing really well. Nearly 64% of absentee voters have sent their completed ballots to Montana election officials. Secretary of State spokeswoman Blair Fiasset says more than 150,000 out of about 240,000 of the requested absentee ballots have been turned in as of this morning, 5 days before Tuesday's midterm elections. The requested ballots represent more than a third of the state's 670,000 registered voters. Strong absentee returns could boost the overall turnout. Secretary of State Linda McCullough tells Lee Newspapers of Montana that midterm elections usually mean lower turnouts than presidential elections. She says turnout this year will likely be comparable to 2010, when 56% of registered voters cast ballots. Absentee ballot returns are the highest so far in Golden Valley County and lowest in Petroleum County. An appellate court has rejected a request to block Montana campaign laws before Tuesday's election. The 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rejected an emergency motion for an injunction from Montanans for Community Development. The injunction would have allowed certain tax-exempt groups to release campaign-related ads without disclosing their donors or spending. The Billings-based group says the definition in state law defining campaign contributions, expenditures, and political committees are too vague and violate its free speech rights. They asked the appellate court for the injunction after being rejected twice by U.S. District Judge Dana Christensen. Attorneys for the group say it wanted to release ads before the election that mentioned candidates without being labeled a political organization. The court denied the injunction, but the lawsuit challenging the state laws is still pending. The Great Falls Tribune is reporting that an unknown group is trying to send, quote, questionable campaign letters into state legislative races. The paper says Montana Commissioner of Political Practices, Jonathan Modell, is warning candidates the letters raise issues of possible money laundering and inappropriate campaign coordination or over-the-limit in-kind campaign contributions. Modell emailed legislative candidates Tuesday, warning them that Philip Taylor of Bozeman offered two Republican candidates a pre-written letter that they could say came from their wives, along with the money to cover the cost of mailing it to 800 people in their legislative districts. The letters appear similar to those related to illegal campaign activities in the 2008, 10, and 12 elections involving the group Western Tradition Partnership. Modell told the Tribune that it's not clear if the activity is related to that group or whether it violates Montana campaign finance laws. A Glendive veteran has filed a complaint with the Veterans Health Administration after his request for medical services was answered with paperwork belonging to a different veteran in Bozeman. Kit Braden tells the Billings Gazette that the paperwork included the Bozeman veteran's name, address, date of birth, social security number, and his medical condition. Braden says he doesn't know who might have received his paperwork, which contained the same information. He's concerned someone could use the information to steal his identity. The interim director of the VA Montana Healthcare System, Johnny Gennetti, said the error was under investigation. A VA Montana Healthcare spokesperson says the woman responsible for the error has been moved out of that department and staff have been added to help prevent similar mistakes. A Whitefish woman who pleaded guilty to negligent homicide and the stabbing death of her husband has been given a 10-year suspended prison sentence. KECI-TV reports Anne-Marie Newton was sentenced Wednesday in district court in Kalispell for the November 25th stabbing of 37-year-old Chad Newton. He died at a Kalispell hospital on December 29th after his family took him off life support. Anne-Marie Newton pleaded guilty in August. Witnesses told investigators that the couple had previous violent arguments. Defense attorney Sean Hinchney said Anne-Marie Newton stabbed her husband in self-defense. Homelessness is an issue in several Montana cities and towns. They're using different strategies to address it. This week, Billings is working on a new approach. It's holding a summit on homelessness and invited experts from San Diego and San Antonio to offer advice. Yellowstone Public Radio's Jackie Yamanaka reports.
Homelessness is not new to Billings, but it has changed, says City Administrator Tina Volek. She says over the past 2 years, city officials and those doing business downtown noticed an increase in the homeless population, an increase in panhandling, and other issues like disorderly conduct or sleeping and urinating in public places.
And we heard story after story about incidents involving transients. We've always had a homeless population, but we have had systems and organizations that dealt with that. This is a different group.
So in May, city officials and the Downtown Billings Alliance began working on a summit to showcase best practice models from other communities and come up with solutions for Billings. Mark Carmona is the CEO for San Antonio's Haven for Hope. Its transformational campus brings together services to impact homelessness. He says Billings has many elements it needs to tackle this issue and includes the will to do something. So when asked, so what works or doesn't work, he has this advice. Meet people where they are and ask, what do you need?
The story I tell is of a gentleman we encountered that said, you know, we were... He goes, I don't need to learn how to write a resume. I don't need to learn how to interview for a job. I know how to do that. I need a job. And so light went on. We said, well, maybe we should hire job coaches.
The same advice is true for those facing addictions or mental health issues. Denny McLaughlin is a program manager for Mental Health Systems Incorporated and part of the Serial Inebriate Program in San Diego.
So we ask our clients to participate in their own care. What do you need? How can we fix this? If you think that people want to die of alcoholism on the street, that's just craziness.
She says there's still homelessness in San Diego, but there are not many homeless inebriates because law enforcement, mental health and addictions counselors, the medical community, and others don't make it comfortable to be homeless and alcoholic in San Diego. She says to get services, it's tied to responsibility. She says that fact keeps some of the homeless from flocking to San Diego.
You know, come on in. If you're, just so you know, though, the expectation is that you're going to be part of a coordination of care. And if you're coming in here homeless, you're going to participate in your own life, and there's some responsibility, and there's some certain things that are going to happen to you. And if you want to participate in those services and you are in Billings, then that's great. And we have found very quickly that those people that don't want to work on their alcoholism, that don't want to work on their homelessness or those problems, their mental health issues, they're like, you don't want to go to San Diego, because if you get there, they're going to make you do stuff.
Denny McLaughlin, Mark Carmona, and others are among the featured speakers at this week's Community Innovation Summit. At the conclusion of the event, participants will work on next steps for Billings. Jackie Yamanaka, YPR News.
Grizzly bears in the Yellowstone ecosystem are close to losing their endangered species status. Chris Servine says that population is healthy, robust, and ready for that transition. Servine is the Grizzly Bear Recovery Coordinator for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He and other members of an interagency grizzly bear management subcommittee met yesterday in Bozeman to discuss the status of Yellowstone grizzly bears. As reported earlier this week, 20 grizzlies have been killed or removed from the Yellowstone region so far this year. That compares to 29 grizzly bears last year and 56 in 2012. Servine tells Edward O'Brien this has been a good food year for the predators, and most of them are in excellent condition.
Berry production was very high in the Yellowstone ecosystem this year, and we're seeing more berry production on a regular basis, probably because of wetter climate conditions, and productivity is very high, so the bears are using berries. It was an excellent white bark pine year, too. So the foods that they have available to them were very plentiful this year, and the bears did very well with them.
And those 20 that were killed or removed, what were generally the circumstances?
We have some bears that are removed because of management conflicts. They may get into human foods like garbage or bird feeders. We remove bears from repeated offenses on livestock depredations. And livestock depredation offenses were the highest cause of removals this year. We have other things that happen. You know, bears can get hit by vehicles or illegally killed or self-defense kills. And occasionally we also have illegal kills. And the law enforcement people are looking into a couple illegal kills this year.
What's the bear population between Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming in the Yellowstone ecosystem right now?
Well, there's two ways to estimate population. The standard way that we use that method is about 750 and that method is a very conservative estimate of the population. Yesterday, the study team reported they have a new method that they're using involving mark and resight of bears from aircraft surveys, and that estimate is less biased and less conservative than the 750 number, and they reported that that number gives them about 1,000 bears in the system. In addition, then the bears that are on the moth sites would be added to that. So there's over 1,000 bears in the system now using the best population estimator that we have in the Yellowstone. We have bears occupying about 19,000 square miles in the Yellowstone ecosystem now. When we started the recovery effort in 1981, almost all of them were within the recovery zone, which is 9,300 square miles. So the bears have more than doubled the area that they occupy, and they've occupied almost all the suitable habitat in the Yellowstone system, the habitat that has foods and lower levels of human activities. And the objective of the Endangered Species Act is to list species, species that are listed under the Act, to the point at which protection under the Act is no longer required. And we are close to that point now in the Yellowstone ecosystem. And so there'll be a decision here from the director of the Fish and Wildlife Service in the next, I don't know, it could be in the next couple months, it could be longer than that, to either propose a new rule to delist the bears or not. I suspect probably in the next 5 to 6 months or maybe sooner we'll see a decision on that. And it's not revoking protection. It actually transfers management under the Endangered Species Act to management under what's called the conservation strategy, which is a very detailed management plan that still has strict mortality limits. It has careful habitat management, nuisance bear management, outreach, education, assistance for people living in bear habitat as to how to live with bears. So there's a continuous effort to carefully manage and maintain a healthy bear population after delisting.
You don't think that would open the door to a literal or perceived hunting season on grizzly bears, do you?
Well, there might be a hunting season on grizzly bears. There will be mortality limits in place, and as long as the mortality limits are maintained and we don't exceed those, the bear population will be healthy. And it doesn't really matter if there's a hunt and bears die because of hunting or they die because they get hit by a truck or management removals. They all count against the mortality limit, and as long as we manage within the mortality limits, the population will be healthy.
What about white bark pine nuts? Delisting critics, as you know, say climate change is really going to affect the supply and therefore hurt bears.
Well, yeah, we've done a lot of work. The study team, which is the USGS-led science team in the Yellowstone, did a very extensive analysis of how bears relate to white bark and changes in white bark numbers, because certainly white bark numbers have declined because of mountain pine beetle. And they tried to evaluate whether the decline in white bark would affect the health of the bear population, would it affect reproduction, would it affect survival. What they concluded is that they couldn't measure any change at either the individual level or the population level. Grizzly bears are opportunistic omnivores. They eat over 200 different foods in the Yellowstone system. And when one food declined, like white bark pine, to some extent, they just switched to other foods. Every bear that's handled and captured, we measure the fat level in those bears, and there's been no change in the fat levels of the bears. Reproduction is high, and in fact, last year we counted the highest numbers of females with cubs in the system, and that's after almost 10 years of decline of white bark.
Last question, still bears, but just different area. Earlier this week, a grizzly that was wounded by an elk hunter in the Badger 2 Med, her carcass was found after she had charged the hunter. Hunter shot her, and she succumbed to her wounds. Turns out she and her cubs were feeding on a carcass, and that's what instigated this whole thing. When you hear about these sorts of incidents, what goes through your mind, Chris?
Well, people are allowed to kill bears in self-defense, of course. But what we strongly recommend is that people carry bear spray, because bear spray is a non-lethal and very effective deterrent to bears.
And there are those people who say, no way, there's nothing that could protect me more than a high-powered handgun or rifle.
Well, people think that, but, you know, in these incidents where there might be a sudden charge by a bear, you have to be a very good shot to be able to kill a bear with one shot. And if you end up wounding the bear, potential is that the bear will be even more angry and really can do a lot of damage to you. Versus with bear spray, the spray provides a cone of spray that about 10 feet is about 5 feet wide. And that provides an almost impossible way to miss the bear. you don't have to be very accurate with it. It's going to get in the bear's face, and it's going to deter them.
I've been speaking with Chris Servine, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Grizzly Bear Recovery Coordinator. Always good talking. Thanks a lot.
Good talking to you, Ed.
And now the weather forecast for our listening area. West of the Divide tonight, mostly cloudy, areas of fog with lows in the upper 20s to mid-30s. Friday, mostly cloudy again, highs in the upper 50s to mid-60s. Central Montana tonight, mostly cloudy in the evening, lows 35 to 40 degrees. Friday, partly cloudy, highs 60 to 70 degrees. And in southwest Montana tonight, partly cloudy with wind gusts up to 35 miles per hour, lows 35 to 40. And Friday, partly cloudy, highs 55 to 65 degrees. And now for the editorial comments of Susan Kohler.
Good evening. I'm Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, the area agency on aging for Missoula and Ravalli counties. Many of you have already heard that Montana Public Radio will be discontinuing commentary soon, so this is my last commentary after 12 years. It has been a good run. I have enjoyed providing you with food for thought about older adults and their caregivers during that time. The final topic I want to raise tonight is about caregivers. A person often doesn't call themselves a caregiver when they are providing some level of support to their parents, grandparents, spouse, child, or another loved one. They tend to see it as what needs to be done and the right thing to do. Whether it's taking a loved one grocery shopping, helping with chores, or staying with someone who can't live on their own due to some form of dementia like Alzheimer's, you are a caregiver. Informal family caregivers still provide more care for those in need than paid caregivers in Montana. According to the Montana Alzheimer's Association estimates, there are 18,000 Montanans now living with Alzheimer's. This number is predicted to grow by 50 to 80% by 2025. The impact on family caregivers will likely grow at the same rate, with unpaid family caregivers continuing to deal with the challenges, but in greater numbers. These caregivers will continue to need help, and help is there. It comes in many forms, including information on available services, assistance in gaining access to services, support groups, caregiver training, and respite care. I want to emphasize respite care. This term refers to having someone come into your home to give you a break on a regular basis so you have a chance to rest and rejuvenate yourself. Many people who are caring for a person with Alzheimer's or related dementia are older themselves. Having to be available 24/7 can be very stressful, so stressful that the caregiver may even experience depression and get sick or even die before the person for whom they are caring. Respite care is essential to help support family caregivers, thus allowing loved ones to continue living at home for as long as possible. For some, respite care can be cost prohibitive, which is why agencies like Missoula Aging Services offer these services based on what you can afford. 10 area agencies on aging cover the state of Montana, and all of them can tell you where to find respite care, if it is available, in your area. Simply call this toll-free number, 1-800-551-3191, to get connected to the area agency nearest you. I urge family caregivers to please get help so you can continue to support the person you love for as long as possible. I've walked in your shoes, only my need was as a caregiver for my son when he was young. He has a developmental disability that required watching him more closely than a typical child, and I was a single parent with another younger child. Most days I was exhausted until I finally decided to accept respite care from a local provider. It made a huge difference for me. Sometimes I would just take a nap or visit a friend I hadn't seen for a while. Respite care gave me hope and an opportunity to rejuvenate, even for a few hours each week. I understand that that can be hard, which doesn't mean you don't love the person you're caring for. It means you need to do what you can do to keep yourself sane so you can continue to be supportive. Before I agreed to respite care, I found myself growing more impatient and crabby with my son. It wasn't his fault, but the situation caused me to not cope as well as I wanted. If you or someone you know is caring for an older adult with Alzheimer's, related dementia, or some other illness requiring around-the-clock care, please look into how respite care can help. Call the number I mentioned earlier. I want to thank all of you listeners who have invited me into your homes, offices, and cars over the last 12 years. It's been a sincere pleasure for me. Feel free to contact me or any other area agency on aging if you have questions or concerns about the challenges of aging. And remember, most of us will be aging for a long time. The quality of our lives will depend on factors over which we have control, as well as money and the wonderful support of a caring community and family. This is Susan Kohler, CEO of Missoula Aging Services, and as always, thanks for listening.
Susan Kohler is one of many commentators on Montana Evening Edition. Their views don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can post it on our website at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Christopher Allen. Join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News. Thanks for listening.